Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to the Grid Watch podcast. Just a quick update. I know it's been a long time since we've done an episode, but we're back on the bandwagon. We're getting going with the podcast once again. Apologies for there's a slight audio issue with my mic. It's a bit funny. Just getting back into the swing of things regarding the podcast, so please bear with me. But this one is previewing the Australian Grand Prix. We'll talk about the new Netflix series. We'll talk about the point that's been introduced in the races, our predictions for the season and the Australian Grand Prix, of course. Let us know all your thoughts down below. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Spotify, iTunes and Podomatic. It is down below. If you're on YouTube, it is also there on the other platforms. Well, thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share if you did enjoy the podcast, and we'll see you in a few days for another podcast on the Australian Grand Prix review. Thanks for listening and hope you enjoy. Hello everybody, we are back here at the Grid Watchers podcast after having a very poor end of the last season of podcast. We're back again for 2019, season number 3 of the Grid Watchers podcast. I'm joined once again by the lovely Semba, Causa and Ashley. It is time, it's race week guys, are we all excited for the Formula 1 season?
Yes.
We really seem up for it guys, yeah, Grand Prix, woo!
Oh, yeah. I mean, if we weren't excited, we wouldn't bother doing this podcast.
That's a very good point, actually. Very good point. But
although Rixon's not here.
Yeah, okay, yes. We are missing one member of the team, Rixon, who decided to go out for food instead, but the four of us will do it instead.
For next season, winter hiatus, I'm going to Google some hibernation things for humans.
Have you struggled? Hibernation things.
I think because he's foreign. I don't think he understands.
I don't know how. I don't think he knows how it works. It's just, yeah.
Anyway, let's get to delving into the Formula One. Of course, it's race week. We had testing previously, and it's, well, as usual, nothing. We don't really know much from testing. We know Ferrari and Mercedes are quick. Red Bull also quick. We'll do a quick recap of testing. Any big thoughts coming out of that 2-week testing session?
Rich Energy don't know how testing works?
Well, they don't know how fucking Twitter works either, do they?
No.
Hashtag better than Red Bull.
Yeah, all right. Let's see how Australia goes first.
Quick recap of testing. If an F1 driver can get a score between 0 and 5, you know, if you win a race, you get plus 1. If you crash out, you're minus 1. Then Gasly's on minus 2.
Yeah, that's not a brilliant test for Gasly.
I mean, the season hasn't started yet, and already Marco's been like, yeah, so that was your final crash. Yeah, sure, put some more pressure on it. That'll help.
Marco, of all people.
And then the only other interesting thing, really, was Renault's rear wing, which was completely different. Two other people. Not that it make massive difference, but still, you know, every little helps. But they'll still finish a clear fourth, I'd say. It's not sort of a radical double diffuser job. It's just something quite interesting. But still, it's good to see that they don't just say, "Oh, Ferrari had nice side pods last year. Let's do that."
They try something.
Like a lot of other people, they're trying something different. So, yeah, those are my pickups for testing. As you say, as you've already said, it's kind of hard to really look into it too much.
You do say about Renault a clear fourth, but last season it was quite exciting between Renault and Haas. Yes. And if Grosjean wouldn't have cocked it up as many times as he did, it would have been quite exciting between Renault and Haas, which was good last season, you know, the midfield battle, and I hope it stays like that this season.
I went conservative because you can't really bet on Grosjean, that's the only thing.
Yeah.
It just throws a wobbly whenever it's most rider. Critical.
But based on testing, it'll probably be Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull again with the occasional maybe Racing Point, Force India. Then the midfield, and then about 3 laps behind will be Williams.
Yeah.
Dreadful.
I mean,
it reminds me, Williams' current... Well, again, we don't even know how, you know, that car... I highly doubt they're going to do anything major to it coming from testing to Australia. But it reminds me of someone like HRT or Caterham, who are like 3 seconds off, like outside the 107% window,
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah.
and that's not good at all. With Williams, such a, you know, everybody loves Williams. It's, well, I mean, recently with Maldonado and Stroll Racing, maybe not. But it's a classic British team. They've won, nine? Well, they've won a lot of championships, however many it is. So it's concerning how badly they're doing.
Yeah.
You say they might bring something to the first race. Well, not without a technical director, they will.
Yeah.
Very good point.
It's a smart move, that is. Oh, we're in a shit state. Let the technical director go on leave.
Do you think... What's everybody's thoughts? Well, Alex, what are your thoughts on him leaving? Has he left himself, or do you think it's they've let him go because of his frustration in the team?
I mean, potentially... I don't know. It could be a number of reasons, but I mean, at the end of the day, he was kind of bought in to then bring Williams back to how good they were doing, considering how well he did at Mercedes, and then he's gone there and they've almost got worse. I mean, they didn't bring a car to the first day of testing. They then did, and they were miles off the pace. And now he's gone. It's almost it doesn't get better for Williams, to be fair, but I reckon he's got so irritated he's just left.
Yeah,
that's my opinion on it as well. I feel that he either made a pass at Claire and it failed, or I don't blame him, but that's fine. I think basically he was scapegoated. You know, it came out, he was behind, and then it was like, why have you made such complicated parts? You know, I'm just really spitballing here. Then they blamed him for that, and he just said, you know what, I'm better than this, and just walked out. But the thing is, he hasn't been a big success on his own. And it was kind of the odd race win. He was, you know, he's had much more history than that. Mercedes is much bigger than just Paddy Lowe. And that's what some of the autosport people were saying on YouTube, that Williams have gone through technical directors and it hasn't worked. They've gone through drivers, hasn't worked, different sponsors, hasn't worked, different budgets. It's the team around them that they need to look at, not necessarily going, right, we need this man that'll solve everything. Like McLaren, they hired that Peter Pedrumu, who is sort of Adrian Newey's protege in Red Bull. They hired him in 2016 for the 2017 season. Everyone, you know, rubbing their hands together, oh, here we go, Adrian Newey masterpiece. And look out, because it's one guy versus a team of people all on the same page, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. I mean, you can't depend on a car on one person. It's F1's team game. It's not athletics, or it's not golf where it's a solo effort. And it's having depending on one single person to do it all is not going to work. And it shows. You know, it happened with McLaren. It happened. It's happening at Williams now. And I'm really quite concerned. And not even. I mean, they're going to be running around the back. We've already mentioned how we all think they're going to do horribly this season. And they... I mean, how long do they keep on going? I mean, they've had, was it now, three, four bad seasons? I mean, was it 2016? Was it 2015, 2016? They were, you know, battling for podiums. They were the fourth best team. 2016, yeah. And look where they are now. I mean... How long do they continue going before just quitting from the sport?
I think Liberty might step in before that comes to it, but at the moment, the way they're hemorrhaging money, I can't see any saving from it unless they do a Ross Brawn and of 09 and find a trick in the rules for next year, because this year is, unless they, you know, bet the second half of the season is much better, it's a write-off as far as I'm concerned.
They don't have a massive budget to start with, so their losses are going to be relatively small. So that's the only thing that's going for them. But the fact that Mercedes engine now isn't as overpowered compared to like the Renault and the Honda and all that sort of thing is really now seeing potentially that Williams' car wasn't great even a few years ago, because... You know, you can't say that downfall is purely down to the fact that they have got so bad at actually designing a car that the car's that bad. It's potentially the fact they relied too much on the engine, and then they kind of went, oh, yeah, we've got the best engine in the field. Then it's kind of all gone, oh, no, actually, our car's gone really badly really quickly.
But the thing is, they've taken a bit of a risk with this year's driver lineup as well.
I mean, yeah. Kubica will give them some experience, though, which they've been lacking.
Well, they've got a rookie and a man with one hand, so I don't really know how well it's going to go.
I mean, yeah. Russell, but Kubica has already said, you know, I've had, you know, like a fifth of the time that I should have had, and Russell, I think, had a bigger paycheck coming behind him than Ocon did, because of the Mercedes backing in both of them, but of course they kind of jumped on Russell. But I also think that, you know, they're behind. They did the 14 rules and managed to do that with their low drag, and then everyone started piling downforce in 15 and 16 and dropped behind then. And then when 2017 came, they sacked. I think Pat Timmons was sacked in the February. Paddy Lowe came in, and that guy, everyone was like, okay, yeah, bad, you know, half good season for Williams. It's going to, you know, rebuilding year. Paddy Lowe joins in 2017. Excellent. And then Paddy Lowe breathes on the 2017 car to make the 2018 car. And all of a sudden, it doesn't work. And it's like, well, yeah, you've got two different design philosophies being applied to the same car afterwards. And of course, that's not going to work. And then, okay, so this year's car looked sufficiently different, but they're sort of behind the curve. Everyone did their high downforce, most of them, in end of 2016, and then developed through 2017 like Red Bull. So they hit 2018 on the front foot. But Williams are behind that and low on budget now, with two completely, well, not useless, but, you know, relatively useless. Whether they're talented or not, it doesn't matter. But in this era, they're useless because they've just got no prior experience. Mm-hmm. Not that experience would make them win, but, you know, if they're trying to develop a car and rebuild a team, you don't want two rookies.
No.
And it's just a series, you know, a series of domino effect. As you said, you know, it started out from them overly relying on the Mercedes engine and just going, oh, well, this is fantastic, isn't it?
Oh, good.
and started from there, and then it's gone downhill. You know, you do feel sorry for them. Doesn't seem to be any good decisions.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. But we'll stop delving on Williams, and we'll move forward with new rule changes coming into Formula One. Of course, now there is a point for fastest lap in the race, as long as you're in the top 10, of course. What are our thoughts on that? I mean, Ken, as a Red Bull driver, I'm sure you wish you were a driver, as a Red Bull fan, what's your thoughts on the chance of Max or Gasly getting that one extra point?
Yeah, I reckon, especially if they're for P5 and P6 again, I reckon they're going to push on for it, because they did that a lot of times last season as well. But if Renault is in the top 10, I reckon Ricciardo will get loads of times as well. Because they are both Ricciardo and Verstappen, are the kind of drivers that can manage their tyres, and then when they're like, you know, there's no one I can catch up to anymore and the gap behind me is safe, then they go for the fastest lap. Because it used to be just a point in a championship, wasn't it? Or something, what was it? DHL was fastest pit stop, and then there was something else.
DHL award, and they signed a tyre or something, didn't they?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Off. But you're right, though, because I looked at a tweet earlier from the Statman on Twitter, F1 Statman, and he said, you know, if the fastest lap had been implemented since the start of F1, only three times would it change the driver's position. And one of those times was Daniel Ricciardo wouldn't have finished fifth last year. He'd have finished third or something like that, something around that. Gained a couple of places anyway at the end of the season. So as you said about Ricciardo, that's kind of the right person. And as you said about Ricciardo and Verstappen as well, they seem to be this kind of person that can just switch pace on and off.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable. You've got people like Grosjean, Perez, or, you know, that kind of group, who are just, they're either driving flat out or they're way off the pace. You know, flat out is in like on the ragged edge, or they're way off the pace. And there's a big transition between the two, and they go hot and cold during races. But Ricciardo and Verstappen, they go, you hear them on the F1 thing on Netflix, you know, it's like, right, you need to put the hammer down, mate. And that's it. They're up the arse of the next guy, having saved their tyres for 10 laps or so. Like, you know, Hamilton would do the same thing. That's where hammer time came from. It's quite exceptional. So you're right on your estimates there about who's going to get the points.
I put it on Twitter as well that I would have, I mean, I like the idea of giving a point for fastest lap, but I would rather see them do something about Q2, because now it's just sandbagging on the harder tyre, because the top six get through anyway, if it's a dry race. Because like, if you're fastest in Q3, you get pole, obviously. But what do you get for being fastest in Q2? Absolutely fuck all. Put an extra point there instead of in the race.
I wouldn't see that working, though. Having a point for fastest... Wait, so you'd give a fastest lap for P11?
Yeah, just 1 point. Why not? Like, imagine...
No.
That wouldn't work. No. That...
No, directors. You know, why not?
We'll just give it a go. You know, we tried it in qualifying, tried a different format. You know, it didn't work, but, you know, let's give it a go.
I know what he's saying, to be fair. I know what you're saying.
Just hear me out. Like, maybe a Sauber. Sauber got into Q2, yeah? So there's 15 places and only 10 of them go through, yeah?
Yeah.
And then you got the top 6 sandbagging on a harder, say it's super soft or whatever they're going to call it this year. You got super soft, yeah? And then Merck, Ferrari, and Red Bull go out on the softs, yeah? And the other teams go out on super softs and are still 0.6 of a second slower. At that point, being team boss of Sauber, I'd say, you know, slap on a set of super softs. Well, we lose them and you know, we lose them during the race, or we have one less set of spanking new super soft tyres, but we could go for that 1 point, and it might be the only point to bring home that weekend.
Or they could just qualify on the normal tyre that they would normally, and then just make their way through the grid and get even more than 1 point.
Yeah, but that's not how Formula One works.
With Grosjean on the grid, it definitely is, Ken.
It definitely is.
No, I can see what he's saying, though. I think I agree, but, you know, I kind of agree. I like the idea of fastest lap. I also think there should be a point for pole.
Mm.
But bear with me. Autosport also said what you said, Ken, that they wanted to provide it's a better incentive to put points in qualifying rather than in the race, because qualifying is kind of where it's lacking at the moment, with people saying, well, if a Renault gets through to Q3, we'll put in a half-decent lap or a Force India or old Force India or whatever, they know they're not going to get above, so it's half the time they don't run, and or they try and get P11 because you get a better choice of tyre, you know, and it's like there's no incentive to go out and absolutely push the car to the limit, because it's like, well, you know, one, two extra places versus the engine mileage, the extra set of tyres, the risk of crashing, the risk of failure on the car, nah, sit it out. Because there's such a big performance gap, so you're right on the idea for quali.
Hmm. Maybe you're gonna ask the FIA if they can change it, Ken. I don't know if they're gonna listen to you, but
well, if I would get in the same room with FIA, that would not be my first question.
What would be your first question if you were in a room with Todd, Chase Carey, and Ross Brawn?
Stop giving stupid penalties.
Not fair. Security, can you remove this Ken bloke, please?
Can you remove the foreigner, the crazy foreigner, out of the room?
How did he even get in here?
I think the penalties are given fairly.
Oh, no. Okay, so Ken would give that. Alex and Ashley. Ashley, you go first. If you could change one rule in F1, what would you change?
I'll change one rule?
Yeah.
But the thing is, a budget cost cap would be a good idea, but then get around that. So I think perhaps prize money distribution, but you know, Liberty are looking at that. They're just trying to wait until Bernie's rules finish, until they can properly get rid of it. I think it's the Concord Agreement for 2020, is it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
After that, they can actually get, you know, down and dirty with the prize money separation, but then it's being compensated because they pay more as an entry fee then, but at the same time it's just a bit, as we all know, there's big disparities.
So what was your answer?
It would be to adjust the prize money.
Okay, all right, good answer, Alex.
Better free-to-air contracts for UK viewers.
Oh that's a good one.
That is a good one.
What would you say?
I would change the rules so they could add sprinklers at random points on the circuit and just change
the volume. Move on.
Didn't make it exciting. Whoop! There we go.
Move on.
Oh, Vettel spun. Oh, that happened again. Oh no. No, I'd change. No, I
no,
would.
No, the sprinkler came on.
No, I would. Yeah. I would change. I think I would like to have. I think I'd change it rather than having one big long race. I'd have a sprint race and a feature
don't
race.
Sprint race. Oh, no.
But reverse grid in the second race.
No, I like that. No, that's fair.
They do it in touring cars. They do it in other series. Just to try it. That's like a one-off,
well,
one-off non-points race. They used to do that. They used to do a Grand
yeah.
Prix where no points carried.
Oh, now that you say that, now that you compare it to other racing series, but what's the idea, or how do you guys think about a Joker lap? Yeah, I actually like that idea.
Add a Joker lap.
The thing is, though, is that that's pretty much a pit stop.
No, it's not. It's not. And as a penalty, so like I said...
No, it is, Ken. No, because everyone has to do a pit stop. Everyone has to do a Joker lap in Rallycross. It's the same thing.
It's a longer way around the circuit. What is a pit stop?
A pit stop, you actually stop. You lose 20, 25 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a Joker lap could be less than that. But like I said, when you asked what would you change, I would like, you know, with the penalties, because now turn, you know, first lap, you can just push everyone wide and crash into anyone who wants, because it's first lap incident. Like halfway through the race, if you fart to the car next to you, you get 5 seconds slapped on you. No, you could just say, instead of a 5 second stop and go, take an extra Joker lap.
Yeah, but then you have to modify all the circuits. That's going to be such a huge expense.
Or you only add it on circuits that already have it.
Well, look, if you added to Paul Ricard, you could add a load of them onto that circuit.
Oh, you could give each driver his own.
Each driver has his own one, yeah.
What? And I just looked it up. If someone else threw up the idea of Joker laps, and apparently Bernie Eccleston. Did. And I'm not sure if I should be proud of that or be very ashamed. I have no idea.
No.
Of course it's Bernie. Honestly.
Classic.
But I mean, the interesting part someone hasn't raised would be changing the error rules, so we'd have more of an IndyCar style error regs instead. I think everyone would.
Aren't we supposed to be getting on that 2021?
No.
Hopefully.
That's quite a long way away.
Ooh.
I mean, that's hopefully what we'll get, you know what I mean? But again, with Ross Brawn in charge, I mean, maybe, you know, he'll actually be good on his word, but previously things haven't really worked out. But I saw Tiff Nadell tweeted, someone was moaning about F1 saying, oh, they should adopt Formula E style aero regs because it's just better. And Tiff Nadell was like, well, that's because they never go fast enough to actually generate any downforce. So just come on.
Roasted.
But with speaking of Joker laps, you've got Formula E to do the attack mode, don't they? Mm. But they force every driver to use it twice in the race. I don't think they should be forced to use it.
Mm.
I think it should be there as a tool if they want to use it. But that's the same kind of thing, right? They're forcing the drivers to take a longer route at least twice in the race or twice in the race to spice it up. So it's, you know, a Joker lap isn't massively far from that, a different route. So, I mean, it's possible.
Maybe we can ask Chase Carey one day if we can.
Get
him on, yeah, with all my connections on Twitter.
Discord.
I'll get Chase Carey.
Discord.
Yeah.
You know you're listening, Chase. Come on, Chase.
I'll offer you a donut.
I always go to Reddit to see if I'm
a kebab.
It's on the internet, watch out.
I go to Reddit to see if there's like-minded people, and everyone's... So apparently someone asked a question on Reddit about Joker laps. I'm still on about that. Someone said, take your idea and put it in the trash. And then one guy said, and that's actually a good idea, see, like, for example, Monaco, Baku. You're stuck behind, let's make it realistic, a Williams.
No one's stuck behind the Williams. They're all ahead of them.
No. Well, you say that, but... All right, bad example. McLaren, you're stuck behind a McLaren.
Hey.
You take your Joker lap, you come out of your Joker lap, you got clean air, you can push on.
You can take a pit stop.
But what's the point of taking a pit stop? Oh, you might as well bring back refueling then. That would make it
at
least.
Yeah,
that.
But where are you going to fit a Joker lap around Monaco?
Monaco can't fit a car.
No. Wait, they can hardly fit the circuit on there. Where could they add a Joker lap?
They can hardly fit the circuit. You do know what a street circuit means, yeah? The streets are always there.
Fine, okay, you got me there. Okay, yeah, but looking at this. Okay, right, fuck off. Right. Anyway, we're going to move on. The next topic I wanted to talk about was how Todd wants to. Well, Todd and Chase Carey want to introduce more teams of Formula One. The problem is, of course, the expense. And of course, the teams don't want to, because that means there would be a larger spread of the prize pool, which would reduce everybody's fees. But more teams means more money into the sport, more sponsorships, more fans, etc., which builds the money back up again. So they want to get up to 24 teams like we used to have in the days of Caterham and HRT and even Marussia. So what are our thoughts? More teams the better, or do we like it being 20?
Oh, you mean drivers? So 10 teams.
Yeah, I was going to say, not 20 teams.
Sorry, 10 teams.
That would be a hell of a big field.
That would be, that's like NASCAR style. No, do we want more, do we want 12 teams?
Yeah, so 24 drivers.
Yeah, 12 teams is better. It's as simple as that.
Yes, as long as they all, obviously they all bring in money so the tracks get paid, or so that everything gets paid and stuff like that. Yes, but not if it means, like you said, like HRT, Marussia, stuff like that. I don't want two or three teams that are just there for one season just because they saw an opportunity and then they disappear again after a year. It's just, because then you're going to get that, you know that game where the music stops and everyone has to grab a seat and then, don't have a seat?
Musical
chairs.
It's
going to end up musical chairs, but a really expensive version of
it. It's such a weird statement to make. Go, we want to introduce more teams. Like, no, you don't introduce more teams. You make F1 more wantable to be in.
They're more attractive.
Yeah, you make it more. That's the word I was thinking.
But
of.
How do you do that? When
make it cheaper.
No. But if you look at it, from a car manufacturer point of view, all cars are now going electric. Why do I want to invest in Formula One when I go over to Formula E? Why would Audi? Or Mercedes gone over their end. Well, why would these teams then invest in combustion engines when cars that they're producing in the factories are electric cars? Why would they stick to Formula E?
Brand exposure. Think of how many views F1 gets more than Formula E.
True brand exposure.
Yeah, okay.
Much more brand exposure.
But going forward, Formula E's getting bigger and bigger year after year.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's why you then have to reduce the cost, which is what they're trying to do. And Ferrari going, oh no, we'll leave if you do. I tell Ferrari to
But the thing is, Formula E might be the future, and yes, it is. And the cars look great, and this and that. But let me ask you three a question, yeah? Someone says, I'll give you 5,000. No, wait, sorry. You can keep watching Formula One, or I give you £5,000. You never watch Formula One again, and you have to stick to Formula E. No, thank you.
Take the latter. Yeah.
What, you would watch Formula E at £5,000?
I watch Formula E anyway.
Yeah, Formula E is great. Love Formula E.
Why not? Are you fucking kidding me?
Nah.
Formula E is amazing.
Beginning of the season, ooh, Van Dorn's in Formula E. I better start following now. Hilarious. And then suddenly, ooh, Formula E yesterday was amazing. Wait, it was yesterday? I'm not gonna set an alarm clock at 5 a.m. for fucking Formula E.
Formula E is good. It's exciting.
The racing's good, but it's just a bit slow.
He's got a point now.
It is a bit slow. It's like watching go-karts, but it's essentially
a bit quiet.
Go-karts.
Oh, I don't mind the sound.
No, the sound is good. It's like watching jet engines race around, jet fighters racing around, but they don't fly.
If I want to see jet engines racing, I go to Heathrow.
No, you can't do that. The drones are there. They don't actually fly.
Oh, yeah.
They're stuck on the ground.
Ken's there with the drone watching it.
That's why they're not flying. It makes sense now. No, but I disagree with you, Ken. And
Formula E, yes, it is the future, but let's just enjoy Formula One while we still can.
The problem is the only people who buy vehicles based off how they perform as a brand, you know, in the sport are kind of basic fans. They kind of go, I want a Renault because Renault are doing well in F1. None of us who are, you know, I'd say, quite committed fans.
Sensible? Oh,
we'll base our next vehicle on who wins the F1 World Championship. You know, it doesn't matter. In the same way that when I go to the Toyota dealership, I don't see the LMP1 car anywhere in the station, anywhere in the dealership. Well, you know, the problem is with Air Formula E, it's a different, it appeals to a different market. You know, you've got the short, sharp races, you've got whatever you want to call it, gimmicks, you want to call it or whatever. They're more exciting, let's say, for the basic standard viewer, you know, so they're more likely to pick up fans there who are going to say, oh, I'm going to get an Audi because Audi won the championship. You know, it's people like that.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming
from. Effect in Formula E rather than an hour and a half Grand Prix, where people only tune in for the first laps and the last laps, who are of that type of character. So that's why more brands are going that way. And of course, the electric cars are part of that as well. But of course, technology. But again, it just seems to make more of an impact in Formula E instead.
Thing is, if they want to test stuff like we said, you know, like rule changes, and obviously not aerodynamics, because that wouldn't work comparing Formula E to Formula One with aerodynamics. It doesn't work because it's different speeds and stuff like that. But if they want to do changes like splitting off prize money and other stuff, you know, other ideas that Liberty Media might think like, this might be a good idea. Try in Formula E first, and I'm not dissing Formula E here, but try it there first, and if it catches on, then you can give it a go in Formula One. Because like the when the Attack Zone first came out, everyone was like Mario Kart, but now it's what, 3-4 races later, and no one seems to bother. It doesn't seem to bother anyone anymore.
I mean, you surely try it in lower motorsports and Formula E. You try it in Formula Ford or, you know, British F3 or something first. If you want to try something out, you try it that isn't internationally recognised. Formula E is it's quite big now. It's not Formula E of Season 1. But I've completely forgot what our original point was here. Teams.
The grid expansion, wasn't it? And we were talking about separating of prize money. I'm along the same lines as everyone else, that the only people who can come in now are people who take a Haas-type mentality where they buy most of the car off the shelf and then design the chassis themselves, because anything else in this era with the expense will just end up with joke teams like 2010 to 2016 who can never close the gap, who can never keep up. The only way to go is through the Haas way in this current format. Now when the Bernie rules are lifted and people are able to actually make mixed and better prize money distribution, all the rest of it, then we might see some more teams coming in. But until, you know, 2020, and then by 2021, we won't see any new teams until then, even though they want them. But as you said, I think as Causa, you said that it has to be more attractive. You can't just say, right, we want 24 teams now, open the door, and then no one comes. It needs to be attractive to them, just like Formula E is attractive to BMW, Mercedes, Audi. Did Porsche say they were going to Formula E as well?
I think they've mentioned it. I don't think they've confirmed it. But Renault E-Dams are there.
They were, but of course they said they left, but of course Renault and Nissan are the same company, so it's just a rebadge, because Nissan needs more publicity because they left the V8 Supercars Championship, so they can just, it's an easy way to promote, far easier and less expensive than going into F1, so that's why they're going there.
Yeah, I think, like you said, Ash, I mean, we're waiting for those rule changes, and once that happens, I think the sport will have a bigger appeal. But if you're a Haas, if you're a racing point, do you want other teams in the sport that will essentially copy your model in how you conduct yourselves in Formula One?
Of course, that leads on to the discussion of like spec cars, right? Where you can go out and you can buy a Ferrari or a Mercedes and then run it as your own as a small team. So how far does that go? Does it go to a point where you can actually buy the whole car, or limited to where Haas can buy bits of, I think it's mechanics and aero or something like that, and then they have to build the chassis themselves. How far does that go? How much do you allow? But you're right there. Now, wouldn't you be a bit miffed off if you've put all this into R&D and someone just goes and buys the car from you and is a threat? Mm. It's a big kettle of, you know, big can of worms, let's say.
It'd be interesting to see how they develop that, and if new team come in, hopefully. We have 12 teams and 24 drivers, but we're gonna have to wait and see. But recently as well, on those who use Netflix. If you don't use Netflix, where have you been? You probably live under a rock. But the Drive to Survive series has just come out at the start of March, and it's quite a big hit, and I think we're all quite big fans of it.
Under a Rock also includes the people who live in Wales, so that's fine. No, it's good. It's good. I think it's interesting. It's something different because people always go, "Oh, F1. Oh, we love the numbers." Well, it's actually a bit of a more drama soap aimed at the more casual fan and the non-fan as well. It's the best place to put it to pick up people who aren't necessarily interested in the sport.
Thing is, though, if I see where you're coming from, but if they really wanted to include like new fans that weren't fans in 2018 and want to persuade him to watch in 2019, yeah, I don't think Drive to Survive pulled that off.
No,
it was not.
After
seeing all that drama, don't you think people who don't watch this, like, sincerely don't watch the sport, yeah? Do you think that after Drive to Survive, they're going to set their alarm clock at 10 past 5 on Sunday? I don't think
it's more progressive than that. It's more progressive than that. You know, they're just encouraging people to start following it. And then, of course, it may go from there. You're just trying to get people to engage with the sport initially, and how far they want to go is up to them. I mean, I've been watching it now for years, but I don't ever set my alarm earlier than the 9 or 8 a.m. to watch a race. And last year, I very rarely watched it live because I just watched the highlights, go on Twitter, and I'd see everything that happened in bits and bobs. Or, yeah, it was rare that I'd watch the race. Even if Channel 4 covered it live, I'd watch their highlights because I couldn't be bothered. It just wasn't worth it. You know, even as a fan who has a decent amount of knowledge and likes the sport, I wouldn't do it.
I know I'm not 100% of Netflix audience, but a good example was I'm an avid F1 fan. Like, I do wake up for every race, and if I'm on holiday, I say see you later to whoever I'm on holiday with and go to a pub and watch Formula 1 for 2 hours. But my missus was sitting next to me watching Drive to Survive, and she hasn't said to me, like, "Oh, when's the next race?"
So it's an interesting series, but whether it'll actually...
We'll have to wait and see.
But yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, it's definitely not going to make someone wake up at 5 a.m. or want to watch the next race. That's why it'll be more progressive, where people will visit the F1 website, and they may watch the highlights on YouTube if they come up randomly when I don't like F1. You know, it'll have a small impact, but
their interest will
say.
Be, how would you say it? It will tickle their interest. I don't know if that's the correct word, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, it gets the interest up, doesn't it? It gets the hype up for the new season as well.
Yeah.
I think, regardless of what it does, I just think it's a good series.
Yeah, well-timed as well.
Yeah, well-timed.
It's very well thought out, very well-timed. It's clever. It's cleverly written. It's clear what its objectives are. It's not trying to palm or scam anyone into, you know, any make-believe. It's clearly well thought out, and you can see why they're doing it. You know, releasing it at the start of the season, it's very much a Liberty, you know, Liberty were very, very involved in making it happen, I imagine. And it's again, something interesting, something engaging, something different.
I saw some people comparing the way it's edited and the quality of the footage. I saw some people on Twitter comparing it to Rush, and I see where they're coming from, because Rush is an amazing video with amazing editing and video footage and stuff like that.
Completely different thing, though.
Yeah, I know it is, but it's just...
Same sort of over-dramatization,
The style, the music, the sound effects, if they got them right, the sound effects, V6... Then they were brilliant, but the moment you stick on V8 noises or V10 noises, the moment you play the onboard radio from Verstappen when he crosses the line in Austria, and you take that audio and put it under a video fragment of him overtaking Sainz in Monaco, that's when you start pissing me off as a fan. That are things you just can't do. If you're making a show for F1 fans.
Absolutely right.
And that's why I would, if we would grade it, I would give it a 7.5, 8, instead of normally I'd given it a 10, because I was so hyped for this series. And then I started spotting little mistakes, And then I'm like, I can't blame them because it's made for such a big market. They can't please everyone. But it's just little things like that. Also, I'm just pissed off that they make Max look like a
wanker. You're right. Absolutely right.
Yeah, they what they do very well is that they engage the audience to want to watch another one. Netflix do that very well. When they make their own programs, they design it so you want to watch the next episode. And with the way they designed it, each one, they sort of showed a clip of the next one. What I think they did very well as well is it wasn't in direct order of each race. They jumped and changed, which I thought they did very well because as an F1 fan, I know what exactly happened in every single race throughout the season. If they'd done it race by race, it would have been mega boring because I know exactly what was happening. But they changed it, chopped and changed it, changed the teams a lot, which is good to see as well, and not just talking about Mercedes and Ferrari, which they didn't do at all, which was interesting. But they've already done a season, season two. They've confirmed it already.
Nice.
Yep, and they will have Mercedes and Ferrari will have a far more engagement in series two. So that is good to hear. And it does remind me, if those who are listening and you guys, if you watch All or Nothing on Netflix, the in-depth documentary series where they've done Man City, they've done New Zealand rugby team, and they did two American football teams. That's a very good series if you haven't watched that. But it reminds me of that, how in-depth it is. And I think we all can agree that Gunther Steiner is an absolute lad now. I didn't realise how cool he is. He's such a funny guy.
He's in meme heaven.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I can't fucking believe it. Again.
He's a new hero. And I also found some new respect for Zak Brown. And I know not a lot of people think he's an okay guy, but he had nothing to do with McLaren. He stepped up to say, I think I can help this team. Meh. Various success, I would say, but he's still there. He hasn't fucked off because he could have just went, not for me, bye.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, with the amount of money he earns, he could easily have just cut loose and gone, do you know what, I'm going to do one of my 10 other business ventures and make just enough money without the stress.
Yeah.
So, no, you're right. He's...
I mean, McLaren, they haven't done that well, but he's stuck through, he's sat through it. I don't know what the word.
Bear the pain.
He's brought sponsors. He's, you know, the team's changed its color. It's got more publicity now. There's not constant abuse on Twitter. There are people who are back on the train, let's say, and actually believe. And he's made some, you know, he's made good decisions. So it's, he's trying at least. He's not just going, oh, God, this is such a mess, isn't it? How am I ever supposed to fix this? He's going, right, you know, I'm positive. And
that's right, this and this and this and this and this.
What I
really enjoyed about the series, and it's a detail. I know it's not like, ooh, a very big moment. After a race, after quali, when the team, so, you know, all the guys that sit at the pit wall and two drivers have to talk to the factory, or after the race, when it's been, for example, a disappointing result, where they have to Skype or FaceTime, whatever, the factory. Imagine being Grosjean. You know, you've got hundreds of people working on your car, and you bin it in two corners. Imagine having to... It's bad enough telling your team boss, like, oops, binned it. But imagine FaceTiming or Skyping all the people that are working on your car that are standing in a massive factory and going, sorry. Those are the things we never see on TV or on YouTube or whatever. And those were the moments, brilliance that I had with this series.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It was great fun.
Showed how in-depth the world of Formula One is. And I think it opened a lot of people's eyes to the world of Formula One. And I mean, it's a very good series, and I'm looking forward to the next series. But luckily, we don't have to wait very long because, of course, it is the Australian Grand Prix that is happening this weekend. Of course, it's an early start for everybody. Of course, I think it's, what, 6, 7 a.m. for us in the UK?
Five.
Is it 5? Oh, 5 God. Lovely.
10 past, sorry.
Is that race start?
Yeah, 10 past 5.
Oh,
yeah.
God. Right, lovely. but, of course, Australian Grand Prix, notoriously not the best race in the world. 58 laps from the Albert Park circuit. I mean, last year was relatively exciting because of the bottles from Haas. And Ferrari managed to jump the Mercedes in the VSC.
Alonso
getting sixth. So there are potential very good moments coming up in this Grand Prix. We'll have to wait and see if it actually happens. I think do we think it's it? There's so much hype behind it because it's the first race of the season.
Yes, definitely.
Simple as that.
If Australia wouldn't be the first race of the season, I doubt it would still be on the calendar.
Oh. I'm sure they pay a lot of money to have it as
big
first
market.
Race.
They pay a lot of money, and it's a big market, obviously. It's a massive, massive continent as well. But, I mean, can you, apart from crashes, because obviously, I was first going to say, can you remember one big thing from, obviously, we would say like Alonso and Gutierrez, but one like amazing overtake or one like butt-clenching moment from the Australian Grand Prix? I don't. Like in a positive way, not a crash or something, but in a positive way.
Last season, one that triggered the rule changes, wasn't it? It was that poor that was when they decided, look, we're gonna make rule changes as early as 2019.
Is it still free DRS zones this season in Australia?
I wouldn't know actually.
I have no idea. It's just a very good point.
Yeah, I suppose they usually do that on the Thursday, don't they, when they do the drivers briefings?
Yeah, then you will find out.
I imagine they still go with three just to be safe because of the outrage last year.
Yeah.
But I think I'm hoping for a decent race. We're going to have to wait and see. Over the past couple of years, it hasn't been fantastic. That mainly because of the aero regulations and the fact that cars can't actually follow. But it seems the cars can follow a little bit better this season. I've read an interview with Magnussen and he said he could do it pretty well in testing. I mean, again, different conditions in testing. Australia, again, is a completely different beast to Spain. But, I mean, I wanted to do some season predictions before we do Australian predictions. And I know myself and Sasemba are Red Bull fans, and Cause McLaren. Ashley is neutral, so Ashley's got the pick of the tree here. So we'll start with you, Ashley. Who is your driver and team? They don't have to be the same to watch this season.
So team to watch would be Alfa Romeo, because it's going to be interesting to see how Kimi gets on with the car. And of course, if that relies a lot on how the front end reacts with him, apparently. It'd be interesting to see how that front wing solution gets on as well, whether they adopt more of a Ferrari strategy and lose that big element at the top, or they they tone it down, or they stick with it. I mean, we'll see. And obviously, we'll see how Giovinazzi can handle the pressure against going up against Kimi Raikkonen, because that's pretty hardcore, having been having bottled it against Wöhrlein. Obviously in a difficult car, yes. But I mean, it'll be interesting to see how he goes up against him. However, the drivers to watch will be the dynamic between Ricciardo and Hülkenberg, because Ricciardo, I feel, will go in with a 2014 attitude of, yeah, let's just go, I'm ready for this fresh start. And Hülkenberg will be quite guarded and defensive, because it's sort of make or break for him. Mm-hmm. People are going to say, look, you know, this is sort of it for Hülkenberg. If he can at least challenge Ricciardo and be on terms with him, then people know that he's worth his salt, let's say. But if he gets completely destroyed by him, then it's going to be very difficult. So I feel that Hülkenberg is going to be very aggressive. He's on the track. He's going to be open and nice to the media and all the Renault stuff that do with the PR. He'd be open and nice and all giggles and whatever, but on track and sharing data wise, I think it's going to be toxic from his side. He's a nice guy, but at the same time, he knows how much it means to him. Whereas Ricciardo is going to go in with a 2014 attitude, which I feel, and it's just going to annoy Hülkenberg even more. That Ricciardo's not getting riled up about him, because Ricciardo's very self-confident. So that dynamic there will be really interesting to see how that goes, because I think Hülkenberg will start. Well, it all depends on his performance. He'll go in aggressive, and then if mid-season comes and he's getting a beating, then he's going to get quite stroppy.
Interesting thoughts. Let us know your thoughts down below as well. Ken, who's your driver and team to watch this season?
Well, I was going to say the same as Ash, but
that's fine.
But also, team to watch, I reckon maybe Toro Rosso with Fiat and Albon. I haven't got a clue about Albon, but Fiat said to the media that he would look forward to teaming up with Max in the near future. Because that is on the cards. It is on the cards. Say Gasly really underperforms and Fiat is out driving Toro Rosso. It is on the cards. So I'm looking forward to Toro Rosso just because I really like that livery as well, and I hope it's on the telly enough. But driver to watch, oof, that's a tough one. I'm gonna say Leclerc. Just to see if I don't expect him to immediately be on Vettel or Hamilton's level. He can be. I don't know. He's just like, it's Ferrari. It's a tricky situation. See, like, if the first three races he doesn't perform that well, the Tifosi will not be that happy, obviously. But I reckon he can be up there with Hamilton, Vettel, Verstappen, Bottas. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see.
That is the tricky thing, isn't it? Because Ferrari is, there's no other team like Ferrari. There's no pressure like it. There's no country behind a team like Italy is behind Ferrari. The issue with Leclerc is he's going to have enough self-confidence to be able to ride that period where he's essentially doing a Max Verstappen where he joined the Red Bull, you know, taking Ricciardo's setup for the first couple of races and then more came out of his shell towards the end of it. It's whereby he has to just sort of a couple of races, not expect to be on terms with everyone. And then by about mid-season time, that'll be a time to kind of assess where he is. Just be incredible. And from the first race, they'll be saying, oh, is he not good enough then? And it's like, mate, it's my first race.
If he would finish the first three races in fifth or something, I don't think Ferrari would complain. Like, without crashes, just bring in some points.
And yeah, learn what he's doing. It's just that the fans, as you said, the fans are very fast to turn in Italy. But, you know, he did a similar thing in Sauber, just did his own thing, got up to the fourth race and actually learned how to set the car up in a better way and then went from there. You know what I mean? But there were already people calling him out in China where he spun and things like that, saying, oh, well, is he all he's cracked up to be? And he held strong then. So I'm confident. In time, as we said, Ferrari is just, let's say, especially when someone's been in the Ferrari Driver Academy.
But there isn't a single driver who's been world champion in the history of Formula One who never made a mistake. It's a team sport and it's a motor sport. That means, you know, Ollie, was you that said it. You know, it's not like golf where you crack on the pressures. It's just you. Whereas in motor sport, be it Formula One, World Rallycross, whatever it might be, it's not just you. You've got a whole team behind you. And you've got a whole thing underneath you that needs to cooperate as well.
In Leclerc's case, there's not a guarantee that 50% of that team will be behind him. But come out and said, you know, there's been rumours going around that there's already a pre-drawn contract to say that Vettel will get preference straight away. But then they've later cleared it up and said, no, equal drivers straight away. But, you know, they said the same about Kimi at the start of last year. And within, like, what, four or five races, he was being asked to move over, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So to, you know, have enough confidence in himself to go through that period of growing and then in the team and then show the team that on level terms with Vettel, like you said, because you know everyone, you'd be hard pressed to find a real doubter of Leclerc to say, oh, he's not talented at all. But again, we just have to wait and see because it looks like a good car.
It does indeed. Alex.
So, my driver to watch was going to be Leclerc, because I think he'll beat Vettel this season. I'm going to lay that down and just say that Leclerc's going to beat Vettel.
Okay.
Who else would be my driver to watch? Lando Norris, I think, to be fair. Sainz isn't exactly slow. Sainz is a very competent driver. So I think if Norris gets sort of level with him this season, I think that's a very good season from him on his debut in Formula 1.
Okay.
I'd kind of go with that. So that's potentially my driver to watch because I think Norris is going to be a really good driver to watch this season. Team, I'm going to go Red Bull. I think Red Bull are going to be right in that mix this season.
I'm happy you said that.
I knew you would. But you know, it's like new aero is kind of like, you know, like lower downforce package and all that sort of thing. It feeds right into Adrian Newey, and I think he's going to have designed like an incredible, you know, an incredibly aerodynamic car for this season that's going to work perfectly. So I'm really interested to see, especially in places like Monaco and, you know, in Hungary and places like really twisty, windy tracks, just how good that Red Bull is.
Sticking with those. I mean, Red Bull are notoriously doing well around those circuits. I mean, they've done it over the years. I'm hoping they'll do a little bit better than that, because they're spending about 50 million a year less on their engines now than they were with Renault. So they can invest that money in other areas, which will help. So we're going to have to wait and see, and hopefully they can get wins in not their hot spots, which is, you know, Hungary, Monaco and Singapore. Hopefully they can get wins elsewhere. We're going to have to wait and see with what Red Bull can do.
Wasn't that also one of Horner's disses towards Abita Bull, that he said, we're paying for first class, but we're getting an economy seat?
Yeah, love that.
Yeah. Honda's a works relationship as well, so there's not only that they're paying less, they're having works treatment. So
exactly. I just hope someone told Verstappen that he can't go mental on the board radio about that Honda engine, because the Japanese do not like that stuff.
He's been quite happy with it. Yeah. I think it's going to be a good deal. But in the first part of the season, I think we'll see more of a reliability focus in trying to learn what they can and can't do with the engine at certain fuel loads and certain times and certain conditions. So I don't think they'll be running full beans consistently just to save excessive wear and sort of bad publicity, because they'll try and build up to it. So by the mid-season point, and then, you know, following mid-season, putting up more of a stronger challenge than at the start. And I can see Christian Horner now doing his interview saying, you know, we're just learning, we're in the learning process, we're bedding everything in. Don't expect a win. As some of the journalists are saying, that they might get a win in the early season. I don't expect one unless it's sort of a catastrophic luck job like Spain 2016. I just think they'll be a bit more conservative at the start of the relationship, which is to be expected, rather than going balls out straight away, so they don't have the Max Verstappen on the radio or all the bad publicity. But I don't think there's any negatives to the relationship, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
because the Renault stuff was getting very old.
Yeah, I don't see anything either, and I'm quite happy as a Red Bull fan that they are going down the Honda route going forward, which is always a positive after the relationship really broke down last season, especially. And of course, they switched to the Honda power, which they saw from Toro Rosso. And, you know, even at the start of the season, they were pleasantly surprised with how well Honda were doing. I think Honda, the fact they went with Toro Rosso, very under the radar. I think they were in the limelight with McLaren, and McLaren absolutely roasted them. Went to Toro Rosso, right under the radar. No one really cared. You know, Toro Rosso win the points down again. Gasly got fourth in Bahrain, it was pretty good. But reliability has been fantastic with Honda, so hoping for the same this season with Red Bull. But I'm gonna go for my driver to watch. I really wanted to make a joke and say Kubica, but I know that's not gonna happen.
Williams, he might be amazing,
but the car's not gonna be very good, Alex, unfortunately.
No, it's very true. It's like being amazing in a turd.
Essentially, yeah, he's driving a turd around in the circuit. My driver to watch is going to be Carlos Sainz.
Ooh.
Just because...
team leader now.
Your team leader, well. Yeah. He's the head of McLaren now. Norris, again, is his first debut season, so it's going to be a tricky one for him, but I'm sure he'll do well. But I think that McLaren, it's difficult to know how good it is, really. But it's Sainz, what is it now, third or fourth season in F1 now, so I'm hoping for good things from him. He's a very good driver, just needs, hasn't had the car underneath him. If that McLaren is that car, we'll have to wait and see. But my team to watch, essentially, you've all picked the ones I wanted to pick. So I'm going to have to go for...
You haven't got many left.
I have William. To go for Haas.
Rich energy.
Yeah, I mean, they're fighting for fourth position, essentially. And I think it's, was it their fourth year in Formula One now? And they've had some good success after coming in to the sport. I can really see them getting the podiums this time around, if they can nail it. You know, I've heard good things both from Grosjean and Magnussen regarding the car. It's really going to be a, it's going to be a tricky one, really. I mean, we're shooting in, shooting blanks, really. We've got no idea because testing so unpredictable, and we won't really know anything until practice starts on Friday morning. Excuse me. So it's going to be a good one. Australian Grand Prix again, not the best circuit, but I'm sure we'll all enjoy it. But as it's that time at the podcast, let's do some predictions for the Australian Grand Prix. Let's start with Alex for pole, first, second, and third for the Australian Grand Prix in 2019.
All right, pole, Charles Leclerc.
Oh, straight out the blocks, Ferrari on pole.
Yes, and then I reckon Hamilton's going to win the race, and then Vettel's contract's going to kick in, and he's going to come second, then Leclerc third.
Okay.
Wait, hold on. Oh no, we don't have to type it. We can just listen it back. My bad.
Yeah. It's going on the internet, Ken.
Yeah, we'll be good. This will be out before it starts, so we can always watch back just in case we get the predictions wrong. It will. I'll make sure. I'll find time in my busy schedule to get it out in on time. Ashley, what's your prediction?
Got that. Bottas has been quoted as saying he'll beat everyone this year. It's going to be him for like pole, fastest lap, every practice session, right?
Okay.
No. In all seriousness, I think it'll be Hamilton, Vettel, Bottas. But I think that'll be my prediction. But I think that are very confident and are done so fantastically through their junior career that I think after a couple of races, we'll see a beginning of the change of guard, let's say, where people like Sainz and Norris get a bit more acquainted. Leclerc starts really getting his feet under the table. And I hope that's what we see because, some of these guys have very, very strong junior formula performance. And I hope to see some other, you know, I don't want to see the same two teams on the podium all the time. I think that's... people said in the F1 documentary on the Netflix or the series that it's or docudrama, I think it is they call it, isn't it? That that it's just see the same two teams fighting. Even if you do support those teams, if you're a fan of motorsport, you want more competition.
Definitely.
So as usual for Melbourne. However, I think Mercedes will have the car unless I feel that cars with those sloping front wings will be better in traffic, and I feel that Mercedes will be worse. But then they've had that philosophy for years and they've worked around it, so we'll see.
Ken?
I'm going to go Vettel for pole. And then for Hamilton to win, Verstappen second, Leclerc first.
I was waiting for that. Waiting for the Red Bull.
Vettel's not even in the top three.
Vettel's not in the top three. Are you sure about that?
Vettel's also got a pole as well, yeah.
Yeah, one of the two Ferraris will blow up. Well, not literally,
Okay.
Interesting prediction. Rickson has gone for Vettel to put it on pole. Hamilton first, Vettel second, Bottas third, which I think was his usual prediction last season. Yeah. I think...
No, he usually went Hamilton pole as well.
Oh, he did, yeah. Usually he went Hamilton pole, didn't he? Yeah, Hamilton pole, Hamilton win, yeah, he did, didn't he? He's gone for that. I don't know what to say. I'm glad that I'm struggling here because it's in the past, it's always been Hamilton's going to get it and Vettel second, but there's more of a choice now, especially further down. I know we're not predicting the whole thing, but I think I'm going to go Hamilton pole, Hamilton win, and I'm going to put Leclerc second, Vettel third.
Okay, interesting.
So no Red Bulls in the top three, then?
Nope, not yet. Not in Australia.
Right. Yeah, Australia's not their track, I don't think.
I just... I want to say that, but I haven't seen enough yet from Red Bull to say. I
mean, fair enough. I'm just that forever optimistic. Hey, Ollie, you're sort of leading the podcast, but do you mind adding something to our predictions?
Go on then.
First DNF.
Ooh.
Ooh.
First DNF. Okay.
There you go, that's mine.
Kubica, Ash, who do you fancy?
Wow, that is a good question. I reckon if it's... I'd like to say... Well, I don't like to say, but I think it might be Williams, purely for the fact that it'll break.
Mm.
And then we're like, oh, whoops. But I think, you know, I think worst case scenario, it would be a Honda engine. I think Red Bull might go.
Don't.
It might get greedy and try and use overtake too many times during the race or something like that, and it may go.
Same Max. But
I don't really know. But yeah, it probably would be Max Verstappen at the two drivers. They say don't use the overtake again. No, I want to use it. I want to get past it. You know what I mean? In that sense, but I think it'd be most likely a Williams because they've made the fuel tank too small or something stupid like that.
Or they only put three wheels on or something like that.
Yeah. Did you not attach the top of the suspension? Oh no, I couldn't afford the bolt. The bolt hasn't been made or something like that.
But front dry top. Tires on the front, wet tires on the back because they ran out of slick tires.
To Jeff from Codeman.
Run out of red paint, so it's just a black tire, and they don't know what black tire it is.
Halo's fault.
Yeah. Blame the Halo. Ken, who would you fancy for first?
Halo.
Do you say Halo?
Paddy Lowe's fault.
Oh, Paddy Lowe. I thought you said Halo. Okay, right. I'll just go with that joke. Oh, Ken, who is your first DSQ?
Well, what DSQ? DNF.
Qualified.
Disqualify. What are they disqualified for?
Putting the wrong bits in the car. I don't know.
DNF 100% rule.
Well, yeah. First DNF. Obviously, we all know it's going to be a Williams, but I'm going to say a Ricardo.
Brilliant.
Wow. Oh, yeah. No, actually, he's right. Australian driver, Australian Grand Prix.
Is that salt I'm spanning here?
Anybody else taste that? When you tip your tongue?
Maybe
that's something else I was eating earlier.
Blood?
No, it's just
blood. I don't think it's blood being a vegan.
No, it's bad blood towards Ricardo, I'd say.
It's just... It's not bad blood, but all the fucking salty Aussie fans, for the 2 minutes they get internet.
Here we go.
Here we go.
They only get internet 2 minutes a day in that third world country they call fucking Australia. And then they spend those 2 minutes going to the Red Bull page, which their driver no longer races for, and goes bashing on the other drivers. And then the people reply with, you know, don't you have some Daniel Ricciardo content to support on the Renault page? And then you find out Renault doesn't make any videos.
Yeah, they don't do. That's a very good point.
They're not. I thought they did an intro of the season, where you turned up at the factory.
Because the best things about race day were all the funny things with Red Bull Racing. That's why I'm going to miss Ricardo at Red Bull. They were so funny, all the little things.
Yeah, Gasly is a bit boring.
He's just a bit French.
Yeah, he's just a bit boring. Just a bit boring Frenchman. DNF-wise, though, back to that, I'm going to go with Antonio Giovinazzi.
Ooh, he's remembering China.
Yep.
Not bad. That's a good call.
How many races did he do 2 seasons ago?
Two, I think.
Where was the first one?
China twice.
Oh, yeah, he did one race. He crashed out China. Yeah.
Oh, he's going to be really good at China this year.
If only China was round number one, I would have went into it. No, I think it's going to be him just because of his lack of experience compared to most of the other drivers.
Yeah, even if you look at the other
rookies, Albon was racing last season, so was Norris, so was Russell. Kubica wasn't racing, but he doesn't count as a rookie technically. So he is first proper rookie. The first one that hasn't raced very often. I don't know, he may have been racing last season, I don't know, but I don't think he was. He was test driving, but yeah, I'm going to say Antonio Giovinazzi in the Alpha.
Hmm.
It probably will break down with electrical issues because that's what alphas do, and
that's what
I'm selling mine.
Now that we're on the topic of alpha, do you reckon, you know, at Ferrari, Kimi went, "Hey, steering wheel, give me steering wheel." Do you reckon at alpha he goes, "Steering wheel or not? Do you know, just don't bother, it's me." It's just gonna fall off anyway, and then
it turns off mid-race.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Or maybe just falls apart. Some of the chassis falls apart from rust.
That's what happened. Yeah, instant rust.
Oh no, Kimmy's got rust on his rear wishbone from 10 laps in. Hopefully, it won't rain.
Oh dear, imagine.
Basically, it's weight reduction. So
until the car falls and falls apart.
Yeah.
Until he does an Alonso and crashes into the wall at turn number 3.
Oof.
Well, you might
do. God, imagine being a rookie. Turn what? I mean, Australia, the first 3-4 turns aren't the most fun ones.
Yeah.
Depends how you take them. You take them flat out, I'm sure they're pretty fun. I mean, I don't know whether you've hit any cars, but...
Yeah, but you have to stay off the curbs and the little green fake grass that's next to the curbs.
Well, if you go straight over the grass, then you're missing it all, aren't you?
That is a point.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we're all excited for the Grand Prix. Hopefully, everybody else is who is watching. Hopefully, you've enjoyed the first podcast back of 2019, season 3 of Grid Watchers here. If you are new, don't forget to follow us on iTunes, Podomatic. We're now on Spotify, which I didn't realise. I was moaning for weeks that we weren't on Spotify, but I did a quick search and we are actually on there. So you can find us on Spotify as well. Of course, you can download on Spotify as well. So you can go and do that. You can do that on most things, actually, apart from YouTube. But let us know your thoughts on anything we've talked about. Let us know your predictions for the Grand Prix down below. I'll put all the timestamps in there as well, so you can know where to skip to if you require. But thanks for tuning in. Thank you for Ken, Alex and Ash for joining me in the comment box. Hopefully you enjoy the Australian Grand Prix. We'll do a review on Sunday as well. Hopefully that'll come out on Monday. But thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you in a little bit. Good night.